Well, good afternoon to everyone. It's enjoyable to hear special music. Well, after all, thank Donna for her talents that she's able to share with us. It's always nice. We all know our minds have been opened to God's way, and we know it's a total gift from God. What are some of the principles that describe God's ways? We all know them. We know that it's love towards God and love towards our neighbor. And Christ gave us a new commandment to have love one towards another. He taught us the golden rule, do unto others as you would want them to do unto you. To become spiritual beings in God's family, we are to be born to learn to serve, born into his family as spirit beings, and we are to be serving and helping him in whatever he has installed for us to do in the future. One question I have for you today is, why do we constantly have problems within ourselves, among ourselves, and with those outside the body of Christ? Why do we constantly have problems? Well, we can say we have a great adversary, Satan, and he does many things to influence us. He puts many things in our thoughts and our minds, and if we aren't close to God, he wins, and we lose. Let's turn to Ephesians 2 and verse 1 and 3. That's not what I'm going to talk about. Let's turn to Ephesians 2, verse 1 and 3. 1 through 3. Ephesians 2, 1 through 3. Notice what it says here. It says, and you... It's ringing. It seems like it's ringing in my ears. It's not, I guess. I guess it's just my funny hearing. We'll just keep going. And you... He made alive who were dead in trespasses and sins, in which you once walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit who now works in the sons of disobedience. That's how we were. Among whom also we all once conducted ourselves in the lusts of the flesh, fulfilling desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were by nature children of wrath, just as others. We walk contrary to God's way somewhere in our life. Even if we were born in the church, we walk contrary sometime as we grew up. And we still walk contrary to God's ways at times in our lives. We do we think wrong thoughts. We do wrong things. We say wrong things. We become self-centered at times. And we think only of ourselves. Perhaps I should say I do. Maybe you don't. But I think self-centeredly of myself at times. We lust after the flesh, and sometimes we have anger in our minds, and we say angry things to others. We hurt their feelings. Yet, when difficulties come along in life, we seem to revert back to where we were, and not forward to where we should be. Why? Well, there's many reasons. Let's look at one. Go to James 3, verse 13. There's many, many things that can cause us to go back and not follow and do exactly and fall short, sin, or whatever. But this one in particular, I think, has importance for us now. In James 3, verse 13, notice what it says. Who is wise and understanding among you? A question is asked. James asks. Let him show by good conduct that his works are done in the meekness of wisdom. So there's a humbleness in the knowledge that you have. But if you have bitter envies, self-seeking in your heart, do not boast and lie against the truth. These wisdoms do not descend from above, from God, but from earthly, sensual, and demonic. So they come from humans and from Satan. Those are wrong thoughts. And notice verse 16. For where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and every evil thing are there. We need to remember that we need to stay humble to be when we get knowledge and understand more things, as it says in verse 13. And what is God's conduct? What is his? That's his conduct. That is his conduct. I talked about them in the introduction. His conduct is the golden rule. Selflessness. Thinking of others. Those are God's conduct. Thinking about what we say. if the words hurt the character of another, do we say positive things about them or do we say negative things about others? What is our conduct? Verse 14 and 15, it said about bitter envies and self-seeking in your heart. Do not boast and lie against the truth. The wisdom does not descend from above, but from earthly, sensual, demonic. This way is not God's way, it's Satan's way. It's all about Satan's way. In verse 16, it gets to what I want to talk about today. For where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and every evil thing are there. Today I like to look at the subject of envy and jealousy. When I looked up the definition, which I'll read to you in a moment about envy, and it told me to go to jealousy, and I looked up the definition of jealousy, they're like two sisters, two peas in a pod, two brothers in a pod. They seem to be real close together. So today I like to look at the subject of envy and jealousy. We're going to look at examples in God's Word. We're going to see the effects it had on those people. And we will see its harmful effects. And at the end, we will see what we should replace envy and jealousy with. Now, that sounds like a big subject. So you're going to have to do some of this on your own, perhaps sometime during this week. In that part, I will tell you the subjects you can look into and do them for yourself at the end. We'll get to that point. Let's look at the definition of envy. I looked that up in a college dictionary. It says, a feeling of discontent and resentment aroused by another's desirable possessions or qualities, accompanied by a strong desire to have them for oneself. So we look out around us and we see people, and maybe they have something that you really would like. It's not wrong to want what they have, but we shouldn't desire to take it from them. Or envious to the point we have such a strong desire, we're willing to do anything to take it from them. Synonyms of that word envy is begrudged, covet. Remember covet, that's one of the commandments, the last one. All these mean to resent another's good fortune or to want what is another's, what another one has, or to want what is someone else's. Envy is wider in range than other words that are combined, like resentment, desire. Envy is much wider. It's like bringing them all together to get to the point of what envy is. Let's look at Proverbs 27:4. Proverbs 27:4. And Solomon here in Proverbs 24, he uses the word jealousy. But we'll read it, and we can see that we could apply envy here as well. Wrath is cruel, he says. And we look in our lives, and we can see that that's true. And anger, a torrent. It's like a war. Anger is like war. It's like you're warring. You're fighting. You're upset, and you want to go to war. That's what he's more or less telling us. But who is able to stand before jealousy? Who is able to stand before jealousy? That word jealousy, I also looked it up in other things, and it seems to also, when I looked up the definition of jealousy, I can see I could put envy there as well. But let's look at the definition of jealousy, and you'll probably see what I mean. Jealousy and envy are very close. Let's look at the definition. I'm sorry I said that twice. Definition, it says, jealousy is fearful, worried of being supplanted, loss of another's affection. Resentful, bitter, and even one of the words is envious. Of jealousy is envious. Jealous of her success arousing from the feelings of envy. Apprehensive, bitterness, jealous thoughts. From this, I think, from looking at those two definitions I gave you, I think you can put those two words, they're similar, and you can put them together. And I came to the conclusion, from this we can see that envy and jealous are closely related. I say they're two peas in a pod. In Proverbs 27:4, Solomon talked about being on the receiving end of jealousy, as you read in the end of the end, verse 4 there. But who is able to stand? You're on the receiving end of someone who's jealous of whatever. You're on the receiving end. How can you stand? somebody's envious of you, how can you stand? Someone's attacking you, being envious of what you have and attacking you, wanting to take it from you, it's hard to stand. It's difficult. Now we're going to look at examples throughout the Bible of people that had envy and jealousy. I'm going to more or less put them together, and we'll see what we can learn from them. The first one is in Genesis 26. Start back in the Old Testament. And you know with Genesis 26, if we've studied the Bible many times, once we read it, it all comes back, so we won't read a whole lot here. We'll just start in verse 12. Then Isaac, I'm sorry, did I say Exodus, Genesis 26? All right, we'll start there. We'll go back to the one before I misread my notes. Genesis 26, 12. Then Isaac sowed in the land and reaped in the same year 100-fold, and the Lord blessed him. So Isaac was in this land and he blessed him a tremendous amount, and he had 100-fold increase. The man began to prosper and continued prospering until he became very prosperous. So where Isaac was living, God blessed him so much he became very prosperous. For he had possessions of flocks and possessions of herds and a great number of servants. And notice what the last verse of part 14 says. So the Philistines envied him. Why? Well, he was being so well blessed by God, they wanted what he had. Now notice what the Philistines did. Now the Philistines had stopped up all the wells which his father's servant had dug in the days of Abraham his father. And they had filled them with earth. So they were trying to make his prosperity stop. They were envious of what he had. They wanted what he had. And they were willing to do something to make it stop. Block up the wells. So the Philistines were envious and jealous of Isaac. All because God blessed him because he was doing what he was told to do. And he was following them. They stopped up Abraham's wells. Let's go to Genesis 13. That's where I wanted to go first. Genesis 13 and verse 7 and 8. You can see something had happened with Abraham. Genesis 13 and verse 7 and 8. It says, and there was a strife between the herdsmen of Abraham's livestock and the herds of Lot's livestock. The Canaanites and the Perizzites then dwelled in the land. So Abraham said to Lot, please let there be no strife between you and me and between my herdsmen and your herdsmen, for we are brethren. Let's not have jealousy here. Let's not be so worked up and have envy because one's getting this pasture and not the other. Let's make a solution to this. So they had strife and envy at that time when they were in Abraham's time. It's not a new thing. It comes down through all of us, down through the generations. Let's go to the next example in Genesis 31. In Genesis 31, in verse 1 and 2, we get to Jacob. Now we know that Jacob went down, he found a wife with Laban. Yeah, there's Laban, which was his mother's brother. And he gets married, and now in verse 1 he says, now Jacob heard the word of Laban's son, saying, Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and from what was our father's he has acquired all the wealth. And Jacob saw the countenance of Laban, and indeed it was not favorable towards him as before. So Laban's brothers and sisters said, oh, Jacob's taken everything. We're envious of him. We're jealous of what has happened. We want to take that back. He's acquired everything, all the wealth that Laban had, that's how they looked at it, and they wanted to take it. So God tells them, if you keep reading, and then the Lord said to Jacob, return to the land of your fathers. Go. Leave this place. But they were envious and jealous of what Jacob, because God blessed him, what he had accomplished and what he had gained from Laban. Of course, if you remember Laban, he wasn't a very honest man, was he? He did many things against Jacob, made him work longer, made him do more things, serve him longer than was necessary. Now let's go to the New Testament in Luke 9, verse 49. Luke 9. But this one was interesting when I found it. This is the time that I believe he sent the two out two disciples at a time to go in different areas, if I have it right. But let's go down to verse 49. It says, "Now John answered and said, Master," he's talking to Christ, "we saw someone casting out demons in your name, and we forbid him because he does not follow us. But Jesus said to him, Do not forbid him, for he who is not against us is on our side." Christ was telling them, don't be envious, don't be jealous, don't be against them. He says, be thankful for the good they are doing. Look at the good that they are doing, what they are accomplishing. They were able to do this, so they must have some truth, something must be right. They must be following God in some ways, or they couldn't be able to do what they did. So Jesus says, do not forbid him, for he who is not against us is on our side. So we shouldn't look at others as the negative point, negatively. Let's go to Genesis 37, verse 17. Genesis 37 and verse 17. This is talking about Joseph. Genesis 37, verse 17. "And the man said, They have departed from here, for I heard them say, Let us go to Dorth. So Joseph went after his brother and found him in Dorth. Now when they saw him afar off, even before he came near them, they conspired against him to kill him. Then they said to one another, Look, this dreamer is coming. Come, therefore, let us now kill him and cast him into some pit. And we will say, Some wild beast has devoured him, and we shall see what will become of his dreams." Well, that's definitely jealousy and envy of Joseph the brothers had towards him. And you can see that they were willing to go to the point of killing him, to stop him. They were so envious and jealous of him that they wanted to just kill him and get him out of the way. Let's see if those dreams come true. They were really got to the point where they didn't want him around no more. It doesn't lead to a very positive place for those individuals. Envy and jealousy doesn't lead us in a positive way. It leads us to negative things that are wrong. Another place is in Numbers 12, verse 1. So far, I'm showing you all the bad things envy and jealousy does. The examples are in the Bible, and that's what it tells us about it. We certainly don't want to have it, but it's easy to become jealous, and it's easy to have envy. Let's go to Numbers 12, and verse 1 through 10. This is the account of Miriam and Aaron. "Then Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of the Ethiopian woman whom he had married, for he had married an Ethiopian woman. So they said, Has the Lord indeed spoken only through Moses?" They were questioning him. They were actually questioning God. "Has he not spoken through us also? Aren't we just as good?" "And the Lord heard it. Now the man Moses was very humble, more than all the men who were on the face of the earth. Suddenly the Lord said to Moses, Aaron and Miriam, said to Moses, Aaron and Miriam, Come out, you three, to the tabernacle of meeting. So the three came out. Then the Lord came down in a pillar of cloud and stood at the door of the tabernacle and called Aaron and Miriam. And they both went forward." Can you imagine that, staying in front of the tabernacle and the pillar comes down? Can you imagine that pillar coming down and there it is? And he says, "You two come out here right now, I want to talk to you." Boy, I think I would have crawled out. I don't think I would have walked out. I think you would have, my mind would have changed real quick. My attitude would have changed real quick if I was in the shape of Aaron and Miriam. I mean, if I would have said what I did and realized what I did, I think I would have crawled out to the door, not walked out. Then he said, "Hear my words. If there is a prophet among you, I, the Lord, make myself known to him in a vision. I speak to him in a dream. Not so with my servant Moses. He is faithful in all my house. I speak with him face to face, even plainly and not in dark sayings." So it's plain, very plain to Moses. He can understand. "And he has seen the form of the Eternal. Why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses?" So the anger of the Lord was aroused against them, and he departed. And when the cloud departed from above the tabernacle, suddenly Miriam became leper, as white as snow. Then Aaron turned to Miriam, and their sister was a leper. And then you can continue to read, and Aaron says to Moses, oh, please ask that God will forgive her. We spoke out of turn. You can keep reading there. But we see they had envious, they were very envious of Moses. They wanted what he had, that relationship, that closeness. And it got them in the wrong frame of mind. Let's go to 1 Samuel 18. Here, envious went to the point that it was willing to commit murder, as Joseph's brothers were willing to do to Joseph in 1 Samuel 18. You probably all remember this account. Saul was king, and he was going along, but he wasn't doing what God wanted him to do. And then it came on, and David started to become more popular, and they told him that David knew he was going to be king. But let's read in verse, that hadn't taken place yet. 18 verse 8, 1 Samuel 18 verse 8. Then Saul was very angry. Let's start in verse 7. So the women, they just had a battle. So the women sang and they danced and said, Saul has slain 1,000. David has his 10,000. Then Saul was very angry. And why was he so angry? Because David was getting more praise than him. And they ascribed to David 10,000, and to me they ascribed only 1,000. You can almost hear the anger in his voice. You can almost read the anger comes off the page. Now what more can he have but the kingdom? He was became very envious of David. And Saul eyed David from that day forward. He was watching him. And in verse 10, it happened on the next day that the distressed spirit from God came upon Saul, and he prophesied inside the house. So David played music with his hands as at other times, but there was a spear in Saul's hand, and Saul cast the spear, for he said, I will pin David to the wall. I will put the spear through him and pin him to the wall. But David escaped from the presence twice. So what happened to Saul? He became envious of what David was, David, because of the things God was doing through him. And he wanted to kill him. It even led Saul to the point of demon influence, as you see, keep reading. That envy and jealousy led him down a road that was wrong and led him to jealousy and envy and even demon possession. Possibly, at least that's what it seems to when you read the account going down through. Let's go to the New Testament. Let's go to Acts 5, verse 17. Acts 5 and verse 17. This is when the New Testament church was running along, and the disciples were had some difficulties, some persecutions. And we get to verse 17. It says in chapter 5 of Acts, then the high priest rose up and all those who were with him, which is the sect of the Sadducees, and they were filled with indignation against them. And he laid their hands on the apostles and put them into the common prison. And this is one, if you keep reading, it says, but at night the angel of the Lord opened the prison doors and brought them out and said, go stand in the temple and speak to the people all the words of this life. But notice that in verse 17 it says they were filled with indignation. They were filled with envy. You could see that they were really worked up. They were really up against them. They didn't want them at all to do what they were doing. And they had a problem because they were envious of what the disciples were accomplishing. They saw the fruits that they were producing, and they didn't like that the people were going to them and not to themselves, the high priest and so forth. Let's go to 1 Kings 21. 1 Kings 21. First Kings 21 and verse 1, talking about Nabal. It came to pass after these things that Nabal the Jezreelite had a vineyard which was in Jezreel next to the palace of Ahab, king of Syria. So right next to him was this vineyard. And Ahab spoke to Nabal, saying, give me your vineyard, and I may have it for a vegetable garden, because it is near next to my house, And for I will give you a vineyard better than it, or it seems good to you, I will give you whatever it's worth in money. And Nabal said to Ahab, the Lord forbid me that I should give the inheritance of my father to you. So Ahab went into his house, solemn, very sad, displeased because of the words that Nahab, the Jezreelite, had spoken to him, for he had said, I will not give you the inheritance of my father. He lay down on his bed. He turned away his face. He would not eat, no food. So he was really upset. He couldn't have what he wanted, and he was going to go in. I think of when our children were young, they would have, we call them hissy fits. He'd get in there and he'd go, I'm not doing nothing. You took everything away from me. Now I'm miserable. Well, that's what he did. He was a grown man. He was a king. He didn't get what he wanted. He went in his room, and I'm not going to eat until I get what I want. But Jezebel's wife came to him and said, why is your spirit so solemn and that you don't eat no food? And he said to her, because I spoke to Nahum the Jezebel and said, give me your vineyard for money. Else, if it please you, I will give you another vineyard for it. And he answered, I will not give you it, my vineyard. So he didn't say about the inheritance thing. He just said, he won't give it to me. Then Jezebel, his wife, said to him, you now exercise authority over Israel. Arise and eat your food. Let your heart be cheerful. I will give you the vineyard of Nahab the Jezebel. And then if you keep reading, look what Jezebel does. You probably already know. You've read it many times. She writes a letter, signs the king's name, her husband's name, seals them with his seal, and sets a letter to the elders and nobles who were dwelling in the city with Nabal. She wrote the letter saying, proclaim a fast, and set Nabal with high honors among the people, and set two men, scoundrels, before him to bear witness against him, saying, you have blasphemed God and the king. Then take him out and stone him that he may die. So the men of the city and the elders, they did that. You keep reading verse 12. They proclaimed a fast. The two scoundrels came up in verse 13, did what they was written. And they took him out of the city and stoned him with stones in the end of verse 13. And he died. And notice what Jezebel did. Then they sent Jezebel saying, Nahab has been stoned and is dead. And it came to pass when Jezebel heard that Nahab had been stoned and was dead, Jezebel said to Ahab, her husband, arise, take possession of the vineyard of Nahab, the Jezreelite, which he refused to give you for money, for Nahab is not alive, but dead. So he was envious, but Jezebel went on to finish, because he didn't get what he wants, and her husband was so sad, she kept going and got him to the point where they killed Nahab for it. So we see that envy can lead to murder. What all have we seen that it can lead to? The examples that we had, it showed that with Isaac's case, the Philistines were so jealous, they just filled up all the wells so there wouldn't be any water, so he wouldn't be prosperous anymore. And if you look at, remember the account with Christ, he said, if they're not against us, then they're for us. Don't be jealous because they're doing something good. Be glad that they're doing good. They've got to be for us. And then with Miriam and Aaron, they spoke up against Moses, and they were envious of what Moses had with Christ and God the Father. And we see that David and Saul was envious of David, and it led him to the point of having demon influence. He was willing to kill David because he wasn't the chief, the great individual that he could have been. He was upset. And Nabal, we can see that Ahab and Jezebel, they kept going. Ahab wanted that vineyard, and he kept going to the point where his wife actually had him killed so he could have it. It doesn't lead to good places, does it? Envy and jealousy towards others shows us the results. It's not good. It's not how God wants us to be. We're not to follow that example. We don't want to be like that. We want to stay away from that. In Romans 13:10, let's turn there. Romans 13:10. It tells us some things that we can do to avoid it. Romans 13:10. Notice what it says in Romans 13:10. It says, love does no harm to a neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfillment of the law. And do this. Know the time that is now. It is high time to awake out of sleep. For now our salvation is nearer than when we first believed. And that's true for all of us. when I first understood the truth. I was 15. I'm now 50. I definitely am closer to dying than I was before or to Christ's returning. So that's true for all of us. Somewhere, we're all getting closer to that point. The night is far spent, it says in verse 12. The day is at hand. Therefore, cast off the works of darkness. Get rid of those wrong ways, like envies and jealousies. And let us put on the armor of light. Let us be like God. Put on his armor that's described over in Galatians. And verse 13, let us walk properly as in the day, not in revelry and drunkenness, not in lewdness and lust, and not in strife and envy. So he tells us right there again, he brings it up to us. Paul does and says, let us walk properly as in the day, not in revelry and drunkenness, not in lewdness and lust, not in strife and envy. Let us not act like that. And then notice verse 14. He says, but put on Jesus Christ and make no provisions for the flesh to fulfill. So we need to put on Christ's ways. We need to be following his example. We must be living like our elder brother. We must be like him. He wouldn't have envy. He doesn't have jealousy. We shouldn't either. We should be following his ways. James 3, verse 16. Let's go that way. James 3, verse 16. Tells us what we can put in its place. James 3 and verse 16, we'll read the verse that we read before. It says, where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and every evil thing are there. We've seen that through God's word. There's always confusion. There was all kinds of evil things that took place. And we can even see up in the verse before, it says the wisdom did not descend from above, but is earthly. We see where the demons even influenced them. It says there. But notice what it says we are to do in verse 17. But the wisdom that is from above is first, and there's the rest of what you can do sometime this week. You can study each one of the following ones. If you have time, it might take you a month to do all this. But you can at least pick one. It says, above is first pure. It's peaceable. Gentle. It's willing to yield. It's not our own way. It's willing to yield. It's what God's way is. It's full of mercy. Giving everyone the possible benefit of the doubt. And being merciful when they find out they do something, when someone does something wrong to us. And good fruits. That we bear good fruits, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. Verse 18, now the fruits of righteousness is sown in peace and by those who make peace. There's no peace in envy and jealousy. There's only more problems and more unrest, but you only have peace. We can only make peace if we follow those principles that are described in verse 17. Pure, peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy, good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. Now the fruits of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. That's the only way we can have peace. I've been in the church now some 30 some years. I've seen what's taken place over many times through different things that took place in the church. There was problems in the 70s and then there was problems in beginning of the 70s, and there was problems at the end of the 70s, there was problems in the 80s, there was problems in the 90s. And now we have problems again. They don't go away. They keep coming up because we're still human. We still make the same mistakes. I think part of the problem is jealousy and envy. I think we're human beings and we let jealousy and envy affect us. We can't let them affect us because if they do, we see the results. I've seen the results. I think what we need to do is follow that principle in verse 17. We must be pure and then peaceable and gentle and willing to yield. We don't have to have our way. We need to learn to be willing to yield. We need to have mercy and good fruits without partiality and without hypocrisy. Now the fruits of righteousness is sown in peace. That's how we make peace. He's telling us how to make peace. And he tells us back in Romans 13, we have to do Christ's way. We have to walk in his ways. We have seen by example what envy and jealousy leads to. We have seen Romans 13, it says we're to walk in Christ's ways. In James 13, 17, and 18, he tells us what to put on. Are we willing to put them on? Are we willing to stop envy and jealousy? I don't know. I've seen it in my lifetime. I guess we'll finally get to the point when we're about ready to die. We won't do it anymore. I don't know. I'm sure I have envy and jealousy. I've seen it in my life. Perhaps you've seen it in yours too. Let us be like our elder brother. Let us follow his example. Let us be lights.